and welcome to another edition of Visions. With me, Yudalee Wickham. And today, I'm deeply honored to have as my guest, Bawani Prasad, Trinidadian, wearing many, or I should say several hats. And today we're going to have a sneak peek into Bawani's life, the challenges, the many joys, and all the good work that he has been involved in. Welcome to Visions, Bawani.
Thank you, Yudalee, and greetings to our listeners wherever you may be in Barbados and around the world.
Okay, so Bawani, let's start by learning who you are. Tell us a bit about yourself.
All right, let's start from the top. I was born visually impaired. When I was born, something was growing over the eye, and trying to correct it, you know, they probably did a little addition to it, which caused it to deteriorate rather than correct. Nevertheless, be that as it may, you have to live with it, and I've learned to live with it. So I attended the School for Blind Children at Santa Cruz in Trinidad, where I spent the better part of 10 years, got a basic primary education, and as well got some, you know, in-house training as to domestic chores, etc. So you were prepared at school for the adult life in terms of your own career advancement, as well as dealing with, you know, things personal and otherwise. After that, I got into a number of activities, did some extra studies and stuff like that. And in 1975, I was given the opportunity to be a freelance producer presenter at Radio Trinidad, doing a program. Then other programs joined the battle, you know, musical, educational, and otherwise. I always loved broadcasting. There were three things I wanted to do when I was at school: broadcasting, business, and public relations / communications. And I managed to do all three things. Not really from the financial aspect. You didn't make more money out of it, but you took a joy and you did it for pleasure. It helped humanity, so to speak. So I was able to do, you know, those three things in my life. And when I reflect on my life now at age 65 and counting, I think I have done a tremendous lot in the opinion of many, and I continue to be as active as humanly possible at this stage of my life, and I'm thankful for life.
Okay, let's pick up, Bawani, on your getting involved in broadcasting. And this was in the 1970s when technology was not as accessible as it is now.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Like you, we had to go into studio to record, pre-record programs, etc. So that was one aspect of it. And we always had an operator. So, you know, you did all the babbling on, and the operator did what he or she had to do in terms of playing the music, playing the commercials, etc. You know, and that is how it started. I was given the opportunity by a gentleman called Sam Ghani, who used to work at Radio Trinidad in those days. He was the sales manager. And interestingly enough, at that time, he himself was also losing sight due to diabetes and other complications. So he wanted to get from me a better understanding of blindness, and he wanted to give me the opportunity to do something special with my life. And I remember when I had my first chat with him, he said, "Bawani, if you're good, we're going to keep you. If you're not, well, then we have to treat you like everybody else and let you go." Well, I was good, so he kept me. And until his death, in fact, the day before his death, I have a very interesting story to tell you. We were sitting in his office, and the station was expanding because FM frequency was now being in use, so to speak. And he wanted to give me a job as a salesperson for the FM frequency. And we started talking about office setup and responsibilities and whatnot. And it hit me, you know, when your middle stomach get knocked back. That is how I felt the morning after. And the reason I felt so is because I was saddened to learn that he had passed away on the very said night. So you could understand that, do I?
Yes, that was indeed a big blow, a bouncer.
Yeah. Well, after that, I freelanced with a number of frequencies, including the Caribbean News Agency here in Barbados, where I was a stringer for Trinidad and Tobago, covered many activities in Trinidad and outside, particularly on disability issues, conferences, etc. And did, you know, reports on a daily basis on some of these activities. So I continued to soldier on, as I said, and I became a household name, perhaps in the Caribbean. Everybody who I met thereafter, they said, "Hey, yes, I hear you on radio. I hear this, I hear that." I said, "That's, you know." And today I still do broadcasting. Still do broadcasting.
Mm-hmm.
I host a program on disability every Wednesday morning. This time it's live. It's not pre-recorded or anything. So, and it's done by Zoom. Technical innovations. So it's not as difficult as long time when you have to actually travel and get to a studio point. Now you could sit down in the comfort of your home and do it the way it ought to be done. You know, so I'm still very much in that. When I travel to do blind cricket as the administrator, I also do broadcasting. I also do daily reports, audio style, so that the stations get it, they play it, and people know what's happening out there.
Fabulous, fabulous. So let's continue on by talking about your involvement with blind cricket, because I know that one of the reasons you're here is to have some discussion around blind cricket, as well as to pay your respects to the passing of the late Clevedon Mears.
Yes, that is absolutely correct. I have been the administrator. In fact, I was one of the founding officers of Regional Blind Cricket when we were launched in Jamaica in 2005. I was made pro tem secretary at the time and then full-fledged secretary when we finalized everything, you know, put the constitution and thing in order. And then from 2014 to the present, I hold the position of administrator, which is like a CEO, but which has no financial remunerations as yet attached to it. But I love it. And I hope that when the financial breakthrough comes, I will be repaid all the funds promised to me. But be that as it may, it's for love, it's for the cause. When I study that, I'm able to help others. God is strengthening me in that direction. We played cricket at school. Played with all kind of fancy ways, whether it was table cricket, drain cricket. We played in the savannah. We used to use bigger balls, etc., not the conventional balls. But it was only when we got the conventional rules of blind cricket and we started to improvise and to make things up for us. And, you know, every that come, when I was, say, 20, 25, you never know, I might have made a West Indies team. But now I might go down, but I'll be able to come back up. Because basic shots for the blind person is a sweep shot. It's the most effective shots. Anyhow, with that as it may, I do a lot of administrative work these days.
Okay, wonderful. Now, Bawani, you would have mentioned, you know, going to school in Trinidad and having your goals of becoming either a broadcaster, something dealing with communications, and so on. Share a little about your experience going to school as a child with a vision impairment.
Well, that school was a special school. It catered for all children with visual impairment. And in those days, we did not have the integration program as we have over the last couple of years. In fact, our first students to be integrated were just three number, and they got the opportunity to go to what we call secondary school. But the program of itself was not as wide as it is now today. Now you're required to write C, what call the exam? We call it C in Trinidad, or common entrance, as it is known in some other countries, and then go on to high school and stuff like that. So there's a lot more opportunity now for students with disabilities to write these exams in a near normal situation as possible.
Right. And did you get the opportunity to go on to post-secondary education?
No, still, when I left school in 1974, we still did not have many opportunities to go to secondary or what we call outside schools. But I persevered. I went and did some extramural classes, as well as after that, I went on to university to do the communications course. The first year went pretty all right. The second year, I was told that you cannot do it because there is art and there is this. A lot of excuses. Maybe the director thought that having a VI student was enough trouble for him. So I dropped out of the course. But nevertheless, I continued to do what I had to do, seek training wherever possible. And, you know, because I love something that I do, I go all out to make sure that it's done.
Okay. I think that's the right mental attitude to have. You are pursuing your own dream of what you want to accomplish. And yes, there will be challenges, but you persevere and find other avenues to achieve your goal. So I must commend you, Bawani, for all the work you have done in Trinidad and around the region as you, you know, really advocated for the rights of people with disabilities. So tell us a bit more now, because I know you're also involved, or you were involved with the Caribbean Council for the Blind. Share with us what that journey was like.
I am still involved with the Caribbean Council for the Blind. In fact, I'm still a member of the executive and have been for a number of years. That journey seems to be the pre-COVID period, or let's take it back a few years. It was enterprising because funding was made available very easy thanks to Sightsavers International, so that we could have executed some of the programs. From 2010, come down, we had challenges. We had to stand on our own 2 feet. The funding was not readily available. Yes, we did some programs, some initiatives that saw us get some funding. But after COVID, the situation came a little worse. So what is happening now, CCB has slightly remodeled its operations in that they're providing eye care services to the people of Antigua, for which they get an income from the government. Other than that, there is eye care Jamaica, there is eye care Guyana now being revised. And basically, they're trying to get additional funding so that they can implement other programs throughout the region. It's a challenge, of course, partly due to COVID situation and the whole economics of the world, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. What do you see as some of the major challenges? Maybe you can tell us the top three areas that you're extremely concerned about in relation to the Caribbean citizens with blindness or vision loss.
The major challenges, one, is funding to execute your programs. Two, leadership. I am concerned that, you know, a lot of agencies do not have what we call continuity leadership programs in place so that, you know, you could mentor younger people. Thirdly, the young people themselves, they need to get on board and to be encouraged to do certain things, because we find a lot of times the young people want to walk their own direction. And because of that, they have other challenges. So to me, those are the three major areas.
Okay, I quite agree with you in terms of these three areas, because I think that's widespread amongst the NGO sector in particular, where we are having issues with funding to really execute quite a lot of our pivotal programs. And secondly, as you're saying, where we need to really have a good succession plan, one that is alive and working, so that a lot of our younger people can get involved. And I want to quiz you now. How do you think we can motivate the younger people to become involved and prepare to take on leadership?
All right. Firstly, it's sad to note that in today's operations, the younger people, they're not prepared to make sacrifices. A lot of them tell you, well, I can't come because I don't have transport, I don't have funding, which may be legitimately true. But I remember when I was growing up, when I was young, I made personal sacrifices. When I heard about a workshop here or a workshop there, I wanted to go and I sacrificed. Well, let's put it locally, because going abroad would have been a little more challenging. You had to get airline tickets, etc. But locally, I went out of the way to educate myself, to empower myself, to attend these workshops, to attend these seminars. I may have heard things over and over again, but sometimes you hear new things. You hear one or two new things that you could pick out and see how you could make it work for you and for others. But today, a lot of young people say, well, I can't come because I don't have transport, or they're providing lunch, or they're providing snacks. You know, they look for a lot more things. But they have the insight now, because they have had, especially those who've been fortunate to go to a secondary school, etc., university education, etc., they have had a greater advantage over us who used to write with slate and stylus and had to carry a braille up and down the place. Now you could use braille display and all of that. So you have a lot more technology at your disposal. You have more opportunities. But are you prepared to go the extra mile for yourself to ensure that things happen? Not for yourself alone, but for others like yourself. Thank you.
I have heard one or two persons made the comment that we older leaders have made it appear as easy, the work we do leading organizations. And Therefore, when the younger people get involved and recognize, as you're saying, the sacrifices and the diligent hard work that is required and expected, they take flight. What are your thoughts on that comment?
Yeah, that is very true, because you see, we live in an instantaneous world today. Everything everybody wants instantly. But you have to sacrifice. You have more technology to your advantage. But you still have to make some sacrifices in order to make the technology work for you.
Mm-hmm. And one other area, Bawani, that you didn't mention, I want the listeners to know, is that you were one of the founding members of the PALVI Association in Trinidad. Tell us about that journey as well.
I was a founding member of many agencies. PALVI is one. Even mm-hmm. the Trinidad Tobago chapter of Disabled Peoples International is another. Even mm-hmm. Blind Cricket. I like Christopher Columbus. I was discovered.
You are doing more than Christopher Columbus. You not only discovered, but you implemented.
It was not difficult, because we had a forerunner to PALVI, which was the Trinidad Tobago Congress of the Blind, which was kind of an advocate pressure group in dealing with work for the blind in the early 70s, early 80s. And then PALVI was formed, and then PALVI set up its own office so that we were able to offer services to blind and visually impaired persons, because the other agency in Trinidad, which was the TTBWA, was not really keen on providing those services. And we talk about services like rehabilitation, because we believe that persons, once they're rehabilitated, they could continue living as near independent lives as possible. Because as I always say, and the motto of PALVI is, now there is life after blindness.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And why did you think it was necessary to establish the Trinidad and Tobago chapter of Disabled Peoples International?
Well, because, I mean, that was a trend around the world, that you have organizations in each country representing across disability movement, where you had persons of the different types of disabilities being a part of, and you were working hand in hand and walking hand in hand with such individuals to ensure that, you know, we try to level the playing field in terms of opportunities and avenues for us as persons with disabilities. So again, another advocacy role.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say are some of the benefits that you have seen resulting from the advocacy of the disability groups in Trinidad?
Well, from a personal point of view, you get to learn, you get to empower and educate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there is, in terms of advocacy, a greater awareness on issues pertaining to disabilities. But, you know, it's here and there. It's because we're still not getting a lot of the persons who are affected to come out to stand up and be counted. And that is where the problem is.
Okay. I remember vividly several years ago, George Daniel led a 100-day march strike,
mm-hmm.
and that brought some results.
The results were short-lived, because after those persons who immediately were affected got some jobs, after that, all that is left is a memory.
So, but why don't you just give us some background to that march, that protest by George Daniel and the disabled in Trinidad?
All right, let me see from an outside that there were some members. I was on the executive of DPI at that time. It's sometimes not what you do, it's how you do it. Because we, from the executive, did not have any prior knowledge. George just took it upon himself, with a couple of his physically challenged people, to go on and have a protest for jobs. You know, we understand the principle why it was done. But, you know, everybody needs to be on the same page. And I had a little problem with that, because we were not all on the same page. Nevertheless, the result was that some people got jobs. And today, you have to ask yourself, does it work for the long-term benefit? As I said, it may have worked for the short-term benefit. But on the other side of the coin, persons with disabilities must also realize that if you want to be treated equal, you must behave equal. You mustn't say, well, because I'm disabled, I deserve this. And this time, you're not qualified. B, you're not prepared to make the sacrifice. Because you don't expect that they will say, all right, you could come to work anytime because, you know, you have a disability. and a sandal. If you want to be treated equally, you have to show that you're committed to that equal chance. Yes, I know there are still challenges with transportation and all of that in terms of people getting around, in terms of people moving around and stuff like that. But needless to say, if you have to work 8 to 4, you're supposed to work 8 to 4. Don't go in the job half-assed and half-assed, except under special circumstances, and say, well, look, you know, because I deceive her. So if you want to have your cake and eat it too.
Well said, a very valid point. And as we strive for independence, as we strive for equality and equity, we also have to be honest with ourselves and understand the responsibility we have to live in that life and give in what is necessary, what is required of us.
You see, that cup of tea called responsibility is what many of us are not prepared to consume.
Well, it is necessary for us to survive and really live a fulfilling life where we contribute not only to our own existence, but to our families, our communities, and our nations.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, if we want to have families like everybody else, have a husband or a wife, you know, we need to play our part. It just don't happen just so.
So share with us how we can play our part, Bawani Prasad.
Well, I mean, firstly, you have to work like everybody else. If you want a bird, you have to find a cage for the bird. And you have to find a cage, you have to work.
So let me ask you, Bawani, because you were married. And yeah. I know one of the questions that many people with disabilities ask, particularly the blind, how can I attract a man or a woman if I am blind? Because they will not have vision to do the eye contact and see the facial expression and so on.
So you want to know the art of finding a man or a woman?
Yes. So
all right, I wouldn't put it on song like Shorty, but what I would say are your abilities to socialize. You see, when you're amongst your community, your peers, I know you feel very comfortable, but you need to get out there and socialize and be active. You know, meet new people, and people will begin to accept you for who you are after a while. I'm very proud of what I see happening to some of you in Barbados here. You know, some of you are members of Lions Club, service organizations. So you're getting out there, socializing. Some of you, you know, do other things that make life very interesting. Some of you go to church, and that is good. So you need to just not be from home to work and back, and home to work and back. You just need to get out and get things done. Now, you might be a little embarrassed because of how people treat with you. But after a while, they're going to learn to respect you once you help them to help themselves. They need more help to help themselves mm-hmm. than we need sometimes, you know, because they might scare. They might think that disability is a sickness. Yeah, catch it. You understand? If I touch you, I might get blind too. You know, there's a lot of stigma. There's a lot of attitudinal problems when it comes to relating to persons with disabilities. But let me say, I don't know, different people have different perceptions of things. I was married twice. I was married to an able-bodied person, a sighted person, what we call quote-unquote normal. Some of the things that we enjoy, they don't enjoy for whatever reason. And there are a few people who marry quote-unquote normal person and succeed. I can count them on my fingers. But a lot of us feel more comfortable within our peers, within our circle. Now, for example, my second marriage was with a woman with a physical disability. So I used to always tell her that you will be my eyes and I will be your feet. When it's time to go to the market and things, well, I will go. When it's time to drive, I will not drive. She will drive. You understand? So there has to be teamwork between both parties to make it happen.
Quite true and well said. That is how we ought to operate, really cooperate with one another and be compromising when necessary.
You know that song by Teddy Pendergrass, 50-50? So everybody have to walk on the same page, holding hands together and striving with each other.
Great, great. All right, so Bawani, we've learned quite a lot about you and your philosophy of life and some of the agencies you've been involved with and how you have contributed to the development of disability in the Caribbean, not just in Trinidad, where you were born. Now, share with us, speak to our young people, especially with disabilities, as to how can they work towards living an independent and fulfilling life.
Firstly, count your blessings, because you have a disability, but it's not the end of the world. It's the beginning of a new chapter of your life. Secondly, you may get attitudinal problems from relatives, friends, etc., but you have to know how to weather the storm, how to negotiate with them and tell them, look, I am a person first with a disability thereafter. And thirdly, you must know what you want. Set your goals, set your dreams, and do some introspection from time to time, do some assessment, do some evaluation. And it's better to try and fail than fail to try.
Very well said, Bawani. And it is critical that the third point you made, we do set some priorities and really work towards making those priorities a reality. Sometimes we would need to ask for help from other individuals, but that is everybody on this planet. We all need to lean on someone, ask for support and guidance from someone else. So don't be ashamed. Don't feel embarrassed or lesser of a man or woman because you're asking for help. But really set your priorities and work towards them. Bawani, it has been wonderful chatting with you. And thank you for coming to Barbados yet again. It's always a pleasure having you in our island. And I would want to wish you well as you continue to age gracefully with your disability.
Thank you. And it's always my pleasure talking with you, Yudali. Although you didn't get me to the beach, but that's another story for another time.
You have been listening to Visions with me, Yudali Wickham, and my very special guest, Bawani Posad from Trinidad. Remember, you can reach me on 1-246-269-9660 or 1-246-430-7300. You can email me on visionsbarbados@gmail.com. And you can check this and past episodes by going to the VOB929.com website. Thank you for listening. Love your neighbors, you love yourself, and be productive. Ciao.